add anything to that record here? So I think that's very helpful.
No, I can't think of anything in it, other than the complaint side of things. I know there was an interest in the processing of complaints, numbers, or types. To date, in 2016, we've received approximately 190 complaints. They're in general, as Mr. Salinas and Mr. Sweet have referenced already, these are neighborhood livability issues. We also receive complaints statewide on referral through other jurisdictions, support administrators such as the Fire Building Code. We work closely with the Portland Fire Bureau and with the Oregon State Police to coordinate responses, and with ONI and OLCC. So in terms of the complaints, I guess one thing I would leave you with on that is it doesn't really matter if you know who you need to reach. We tend to sort those things out amongst each other, whether through the City of Portland agencies or through OLCC or OSP.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate you being here. So just the packets, the binders you've been given, Council, have lots and lots of information, and you can see why I'm so proud of the marijuana team, because it's been a very complex thing to figure out. Let's just move to under the comparison tab in your binder. You'll find the top one is a comparison of the City of Portland and the state regulations. And again, let's make sure we hear from people who've agreed to come to talk. But this is basically the nuts and bolts of what we, where we, when we are different, and do we suggest to amend or do we suggest not to? But as I say, let's get to the invited testimony and then have those more, maybe some more discussion about that as we move along. So I think, wait a minute. I've lost my spot. Next, we have the Oregon Cannabis Association with Amy Margolis, going to give us her comments for 15 minutes or so.
Good morning, Commissioner Fritz, Mayor Hales, member of the council. I am Amy Margolis. I'm an attorney with Margolis Legal, and I also work with the Oregon Cannabis Association. I wanted to start today by thanking the staff of this program. They have been the boots on the ground. They have gone out of their way for clients, and they have really made this program function. There were some challenges initially, and they have overcome those. They've been fantastic. They are extremely responsive, and I appreciate Mr. Salinas thanking them as well. This program would not function but for their sometimes extraordinary measures. So I appreciate it. I know all the people we work with appreciate it, so thank you. I broke down my testimony in terms of challenges, changes, and then a review of the charts that are found, I think, starting on page 32 of the 103-page document. I work with a number of clients, maybe hundreds at this point, and many of them are located in the City of Portland. Each and every one of them has either started going through this process, is engaged in the process, or has received their City of Portland regulatory license. We have seen some hurdles as part of this process. The first hurdle, although it is not unique to cannabis, has been the interchange between BDS and ONI. This is, like I said, a challenge for people not just in the cannabis industry, but because you need all of your permits before you're able to get your regulatory license, we have many people who are backed up, who are trying to work their way through the BDS process, who have to make significant changes to their building. I have a number of clients who have had to rebuild sidewalks, and this is an interesting and unique challenge just for this industry because of that particular requirement that you show up with your occupancy, your low voltage permit, your electrical permit, if you're a processor, your fire and life safety approval, and all of those things are prerequisites to getting your marijuana regulatory license.
Amy, just as a primer for the council, can you get a liquor license before you've had the city sign off on the premises?
So I think you can. I would defer to Ms. Marchetti, but I went and looked at that same issue, and it appeared to me that you could, but I would defer to Ms. Marchetti.
The city of Portland doesn't have a licensing framework for liquor licenses that's housed only at the OLCC. That is one hurdle that we were trying to get over with relation to marijuana. One of the differences that we wanted to see in marijuana versus liquor licensing, because we have had many concerns where building code was not met but was licensed by the state, and there was some serious confusion on the part of the business owner.
Thank you. And I think that, again, this is not an uncommon issue. It's that it takes place in a unique order and is unique to this particular industry.
Amy, just sorry, I'm trying to absorb a
yeah,
lot of information.
Absolutely.
So worst case scenario from one of your clients, they could spend a lot of money getting a building and a space up to code only to find out that they don't get their regulatory license. Is that one of the concerns?
Yes, that is absolutely one of the concerns. And the other concern is, and I use this example, that you could have a strip mall and there could be a dry cleaner, a taco shop, and a dispensary. And the only one of those businesses that would be required to fix the sidewalk in order to get a regulatory license and in order to operate would be the dispensary. And that's not saying that that's not a necessary change or that BDS might not require a change to the sidewalk. It's just that the responsibility and cost particularly falls on the dispensary in that scenario. So the second issue has been the cost, not just from improvements like fixing sidewalks, which are very expensive, but for clients and members who have many licenses. They are growers, processors, and dispensary owners. The license cost to process an application and renew an application is particularly high. It takes not three times as much staff power. I don't imagine to have the same person review the same personal history form and the same information. We would hope that the council would consider, if you're applying for multiple licenses, reducing the fees or having a multi-license fee reduction to not make it so cost prohibitive to do business in Portland. The third issue is the time to licensure. And city, again, the staff has been phenomenal, but because we have significant delays at BDS and because there are so many requirements as part of the application, it is taking quite a bit of time, and you can see it reflected in the statistics provided by the City of Portland and by ONI, that there have been 494 applications submitted and only 96 issued. And again, it is not because the staff has not been phenomenal. They have been, but there is some holdup happening, and it is preventing people from receiving their state licenses or from operating, even if they have received their state licenses. And finally, and we talked about this, we have real concerns about the security plans on the website or available to the public. This is a real public safety concern. These are cash-heavy businesses. They are product-heavy businesses, and it is a public safety risk and threat to have those available, and we'd like to see that changed. Our hopes for the future of this program is to recognize that cannabis and alcohol should not be regulated so differently from each other. While I recognize this is my perspective, I think others who are listening would agree that the community threat of harm from cannabis is significantly less than the threat of harm from alcohol. And to regulate cannabis so much more aggressively and thoroughly on the front end than we do alcohol is, from my perspective, unnecessary and is not preventing any public safety harm. When you compare the alcohol licensing, I'm calling it licensing, but the alcohol program run by ONI with the cannabis program, you can see that there is a vast difference between the hoops that business owners have to go through, the cost that they have to pay, and where the regulatory burden lies. So for cannabis, it is on both the front end as part of the application process and on the back end for enforcement. And for alcohol, it is a low, extremely low fee, and then the regulatory piece takes place on the back end. We would like to see over time that shift over. We would also ask that the council frequently assess the need to adapt the program. Things like lowering the fees, assessing the true harm. We saw statistics about the complaints for cannabis-related businesses. I don't know how that compares to the complaints received for alcohol-related businesses, but that would be helpful information to be able to see to make these kind of frequent assessments of what could be changed to lower the regulatory burden. I want to briefly talk about, before I go to page, I think it's 32, of the document Mr. Salinas provided. We've heard about some explosions in medical processing facilities. I can assure this council that those are few and far between, that between the code compliance here, the state licensure process, when it works well, that is a minimal threat of harm, and that the 10% bad actors is probably where we will see that live, and not in the licensed good actors portion. So I want to switch to the document that we received yesterday, which goes through the potential changes. I have not had time to fully absorb this document, but it was quite wonderful to go through. On the first page, which is page 32, there are a number of proposed code amendments. And the first request is an umbrella request that whatever changes you make are consistent.
We were all delivered fantastic notebooks this morning, but where are we?
Mine says page 32.
Where is this document in our notebook?
Are we talking about the proposed code amendments potentially? So the potential one, I don't believe they're in the, they're for later discussion, and maybe we should wait.
I never get anything in advance. So maybe I'll just give my tops of the trees observations and then save any additional comments. So there are a series of proposed changes. Some of those are very positive. What we would ask is that any changes be consistent with the state regulations. So things like couriers or micro-tier licensing in residential areas, that those things be collaboratively designed with OLCC and OHA to not cause any additional regulatory confusion. So, in conclusion, and then I will pass it over to Mr. Schumacher, who has come to talk from an industry perspective on what he sees the successes and challenges of this program, is that we continue looking forward to working with the city. The entire state is watching what happens here. It is certainly the most densely populated with the most businesses, and we have appreciated all the involvement. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, there we go. Got it. Commissioner Fritz, Council, thank you very much. I would begin. My name is Eric Shoemaker. I am one of the founders of Swell, which is one of the larger processors in the state. We were the first issued an OLCC recreational license for processing. We are hydrocarbon CO2. We're also a co-packaging facility. We're located in Park Rose. We are the second largest employer in Park Rose, next to Park Rose Hardware. Over the last year and a half, we've brought 15,000 feet of formerly vacant buildings into productivity, two different buildings. We've deployed about $1 million in private capital in those improvements. We are good news in Park Rose, and there's not a lot of good news in Park Rose.
And sir, just for make sure we bring everyone along, what does a processor do?
Processor is the manufacturing funnel through which cannabis flows. We are For, you know, all intents and purposes, we're a sawmill. We take logs in the back door and we make them into 25 different things. So it is the fundamental industrial input through which, you know, most of cannabis. We make oils primarily. We are also a co-packaging facility. We do stuff for other people. We do stuff under our own brands. We are, sorry, notes here. I think I want to just sort of reiterate what Amy was saying. Consistency with state regulations is key in all of this. And as we are working very hard, and the industry is deploying not only effort but substantial capital at this point, investment needs consistency, it needs predictability to get things right. And I think we all want to get things right. So that consistency with state laws and with the various overlapping regulators is just, it's hard in anything, right? It's especially hard when you're inventing an industry from scratch. I want to actually also commend Oni. It's funny, I had an intake for a wholesale license yesterday. This is my second trip here in 2 days. And I did one last year. And the difference in tone and in process with Oni was substantial and I think is greatly appreciated from all of us. Yesterday, I forgot a critical piece of paperwork and Ms. Corso went and got it for me from our original application. That would not have happened a year ago. We would have been put to the back of the line and waited a long time again to get back in there. So we really appreciate it. Also, I think the OLCC is clearly working their tails off. The OHA is clearly working their tails off. We appreciate it. I am a little bit concerned. Another thing that I heard yesterday, and just to kind of give a granular example of where consistency matters a lot, Ms. Corso reminded me that we're about to flip over to our recreational OLCC license. That's going to happen next Monday. Ms. Corso informed me that we do not yet have a CO, which we know. We've been working with BDS and Portland Fire for about a year, trying to help them understand this sort of new industrial process that we do. They've been great. I think they've really appreciated that we've come in the door with real architects and real contractors and mechanical engineers and life safety consultants and all the things one should have when you're talking about an industrial process like what we do. We will be in a position when we convert to our OLCC license where we are subject to enforcement and fine by ONI, even though we are regulated in the light of day by the OLCC because our CO is still pending. And, excuse me, yes, certificate of occupancy. So that's one of those little areas where it's like, I think we all may have missed that. It makes sense for, I mean, again, we've got 5 or 6 or 8 regulators depending on the day. We are, I think, doing everything in the right way, certainly trying very hard to do that. And it's just one of those things where bureaus are not necessarily talking to each other in the right way, or that I'm not sure that enforcement is most appropriately housed at ONI, actually, maybe would be my central statement. I think that's probably the OLCC's role at the end of the day, as it is with liquor. With all that said, I would offer an open invitation for anyone at this table who wants to come in and tour our facility. I think that it's important to get a sense of what these processors look like. We took what happened in Astoria very, very seriously. We were taking that very, very seriously 18 months ago, before what happened in Astoria. And I think that, you know, specific to hydrocarbon extraction, that should not be an easy license to get, right? When you're dealing with flammable industrial gases, it's just not something that you want to be handing out. And what happened in Astoria was the result of really poor processes that just shouldn't be allowed to exist. So,
well, thank you both for being here. Just, and if we could
just get one question. So we hear from a number of people about the potential upside of this emerging craft industry, the cannabis industry. I hope we all take up your invitation to come see a process. I've actually gone to a dispensary, and it's an eye-opening experience. I learned a lot. I tend to learn better from seeing anyway, but I had no idea that the variety of products. I got a little prep on where it's manufactured in the state and the fact that Southern Oregon cannabis is now prized nationally and the number of people coming into the dispensary from out of Oregon and on and on and on. My question to you is, what's the economic impact of your business in Park Rose?
We're the second largest employer in Park Rose, and we've only been there a year. We have about 20 people that work for us. I think the economic impact is pretty substantial. We make manufacturing jobs. Manufacturing jobs are the greatest economic multiplier of any of the tiers, right? Every person that's in a manufacturing role in our company makes 7 or 8 other jobs, depending. I think it's actually pretty huge, and I think we're at the very, very, very beginning of the race. I think I envision a world where Oregon is exporting cannabis on a national scale, and that this could be a very significant boon in terms of not just the manufacturing component. I think about rural economies. I think about how much potential strength this could have in terms of, we have a farm in Colton, Oregon. There's also now a lot of good news in Colton, Oregon, but we are creating jobs there as well. I think rural economies are going to benefit a lot from this. I think city economies can benefit a lot from this. It's a manufacturing business, at least our component of it is. Other components are agricultural, right? So
thank you both very much for being here. Sure. I just want to note that the council will be considering the issue of application fees as part of the city budget. Also, we'll take another look at the security plans and how we can work with open records laws. There is the choice of whether we want to give the marijuana license before the certificate of occupancy, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. Thank you.
I just want to say I appreciate it's not that often that a regulated industry praises the regulators, so thank you for that. It sounds like there's a real spirit of constructive engagement here between the staff and you, and that's the way it should be, so thank you. Let's keep that up.
I very much appreciate it, too. So Commissioner Novick's request, Mayor Kitty Piercy from Eugene, is going to be calling in at 11, so I think we just have time before that to hear from the Marijuana Policy Oversight Team members who are here, which is Sandra Storm and Rhonda Shaheen.
Commissioner Fritz, okay. If I could add just real quickly, the security plan is not available online, only the marijuana control plan. So I just wanted to clarify that. You can request it, but it can also be redacted as well by the applicant or licensee.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. My name is Rhonda Shaheen. I'm here with Homegrown Apothecary. We have been a medical Homegrown Apothecary. Sorry. Yeah. It's a medical dispensary. We've been open for over 2 years, and we just flipped to an OLCC-regulated license on October 13th. I've been asked to just give some suggestions for the industry. Again, going back to BDS, I do think that is a suggestion that I have, maybe some temporary support for them while everybody's getting licensed. I've gone through one change of occupancy permit. It took 6 months just to be issued the permit. And I'm now going through another change of occupancy permit for a processor license, and I'm expecting about 3 to 4 months on that. So, suggestion on that. Another one is the licensing fees. I understand that the licensing fees are there to cover expenses of the program being regulated. One suggestion in which cost could be cut down is the number of inspectors and the number of inspections. I've seen 4 city inspectors in a 2 to 3 month time frame. I've seen 1 OLCC inspector prior to my license, and I see 1 OHA inspector each year. So for me to see 4 from the city within 3 months and 1 from each of those departments, I think maybe the city doesn't need 2 inspectors at a time. And maybe if an applicant has an application from medical to recreational that is almost identical, that you don't need to send an inspector for each of those licenses because it's the same checklist and they literally came through with 2 people, checked it out. Next time around, it was really similar. I understand that some licenses might vary, but just something to consider. My other concern is the fact that when you had the chart up earlier about how many licenses have been approved, there's 9 retail dispensaries that have been approved and 0 processors. So for me as an OLCC licensed dispensary, I am running out of product. I haven't had oils or concentrates for 2 weeks. There's one person who makes edibles right now, and I've got one order, and then they ran out 3 weeks later. I don't know when I'll get more. So as someone who's on the other side of this business, I'm really scared because there's no one on the other side with me, and I don't know how I'm supposed to continue operating if I don't have any products to sell.
Is that related to what we read in the media about the lab certifications?
I think it's both. I think testing is definitely something that's really an issue, but I also think the building code, like BDS, and getting those permits out and getting these processors properly zoned with their building code is really important and needs to be streamlined and maybe focused a little bit more on that.
Thank you very much. And we do have staff from Development Services and Fire here today, so they're obviously hearing your comments. Thank you for being here. Mm-hmm.
My name is Sandra Storm, and I'm a substance abuse prevention specialist. I previously worked with Educational Service District Region in Southwest Washington, and also previously with Multnomah County. So I'm no longer working for either of those organizations. I changed careers. I'm a business owner. I have a hotel development management consulting company. So it's quite different. of course, it makes sense, right? And so in my new business, we have projects in Oregon, Washington, and California, but none specifically in the city of Portland. So today, I was asked to talk about that prevention perspective, and I can talk a little bit, too, about kind of the hotel perspective, or if you have questions about that, I can try to answer those. First, just props for the staff, again, with the whole MPOT team. I think it's a great experience and a great venue for folks with different perspectives to come together and talk and really find that there's a lot of overlap in terms of thinking about regulation and the city's role in that. In terms of prevention, when we're talking about regulation, what we're thinking about is really balancing business interests with the impact, especially on youth, but other vulnerable populations, people who are in recovery or struggling with addiction, are also impacted by the increased presence of marijuana in the community. But there's the most consensus around youth and in terms of youth and what's effective with youth. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. When you think about youth prevention, there are different spheres. There's kind of an individual sphere, family sphere, and school sphere. And all of those are really important to think about. But the community sphere is also a really crucial role. And in terms of looking at population level change with like underage drinking or underage tobacco use, some of the most effective approaches have been community level. And when we look at that, some of the most effective within that are three things that I want to talk about. One is outlet density or saturation. So you've heard that talked about already today. There are some good components put in place. The 1,000-foot buffer is addressing that. But I would just encourage you to continue to think about saturation as being a key issue when we're thinking about prevention. And trying to avoid saturation, especially in low-income neighborhoods or neighborhoods where there's other risk factors for youth. Price is another key, and so we'll find out later tonight what's happening with the 3% tax. But just for you guys to know that for alcohol and tobacco, tax increases have been shown to be one of the most effective ways of reducing youth use and also reducing heavy and problematic use. And then advertisements are huge. And I know that's an area where the state has some authority to regulate advertisement, but there's also really strong free speech laws here in Oregon. And so in terms of thinking about advertisement, I think it's important to think creatively about, you know, how we work with the industry and maybe what the city's role can be in encouraging positive norms and really working with folks in the industry to establish some of those norms. I've seen some success with that with alcohol, where you have folks that are business owners who want to see kind of an established norm so that they're not competing with folks that are doing things that maybe they don't agree with or don't think should be done. And I think that there's a lot of potential there because there's a lot of folks within the industry that that want to have things be successful and have and to be good players in the community. And so advertisement is huge, and I think that there are tools that we could think about or talk about that are more collaborative or creative than just trying to pass a law, which we probably can't do anyway.
Sandra, can I just ask you a question?
Yeah.
I have a preteen in my household, so yeah. I have more than a passing interest in your answer to this question. When you look at tobacco, alcohol, and cannabis mm-hmm. abuse, mm-hmm. how would you rank them in terms of young people in our community, in the you know sort of from top to bottom? What are the areas where we're seeing the most underage use?
So I actually have numbers with me now. Marijuana for a long time has been, or cannabis for a long time has been at a higher use rate than tobacco. And alcohol is still at a higher rate. And so some of the percentages in terms of just 30-day use, for 11th graders, 29% have had a drink in the last 30 days. For cigarette use, that's 6.4%. And then for marijuana, it's 21.1. So 21.1 versus 29.4,
Thank you very much. If you could please send us what you have there in writing, that would be very helpful. And just for my colleagues on the council, we do have a list in the briefing booklet about who's on MPART and who they represent. If you'd like to stay there, we currently have Mayor Kitsy Piercy on the line from Eugene, and so if we can take Commissioner Novick has some questions for her. Thank you for joining us, Mayor Piercy.
Thank you very much for joining us, Mayor Piercy.
Mayor Piercy, are you there? Hello? Hello? Mayor Piercy? Mayor Piercy? Hello, Mayor Piercy? Hello, Mayor Piercy? Hello.
Put it on an iPhone, put it near the microphone. Thank you.
control them. Mayor Piercy, are you there? Mayor Piercy? Hello? Mayor Piercy?
Carla, we can try this low-tech solution of calling her on the phone and holding it up to a microphone. Cobble together that alternative. If we can.
Sandra, while we're waiting, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
So two other things. One is just to say I think having sufficient staff is really important. I know with alcohol, it's been a challenge where there are so many licenses and little staff to not only regulate, make sure that folks are following rules, but also building relationship and having kind of those boots on the ground, interactions that I think are really important. And then just a quick thing about hotels. So I'm not, the company that I work with, we look at kind of standard hotels, both chain and boutique. We're not specifically in Canada tourism or involved in that, but I do think that there will be kind of entrepreneurial folks that are looking at bed and breakfast type hotels or bed and breakfasts, as they're called in Colorado and Washington. For your standard hotels, there are a number of challenges with really trying to include marijuana tourism, mostly because most folks who are staying at the hotel aren't using marijuana, and there's a high expectation amongst most travelers for smoke-free now. Also, a lot of hotels, most hotels are associated with some kind of chain. Even hotels that present as boutique are often part of a larger chain. There's a big movement towards soft branding. And so those chains have policies around being smoke-free. So,
well, thank you very much. And I would have to note my astonishment that Commissioner Novick has managed not to do any jokes so far. So thank you for... Obviously, this is an area where...
Rhonda, how many businesses
Mayor Piercy,
do you have?
Are you there?
I own the dispensary and a real estate business.
Sorry, Mayor Piercy.
And I was a math teacher prior to opening the dispensary.
So you have similar career trajectories.
Yeah.
So what we're going to be? Okay, Commissioner, we're ready. We've got her on the phone.
So I've got Mayor Piercy on my iPhone here, and we're going to just hold you up to a microphone since all other technology has failed us. So can you hear us, and can we hear you? Let's see if we can hear you, Kitty.
Hello, everybody. I hope it's sunny there like it is here.
It is. Thanks for joining us. Commissioner Fritz, I think, has you queued up, or Commissioner Novick has you queued up for some questions and discussion. Thanks for being available to us.
Yes, surely.
Thank you, Mayor Piercy. I was just delighted that we've got a few minutes of your time. The city of Eugene has taken a rather different approach from us, a fairly hands-on approach without a separate licensing process that applies strictly to marijuana businesses. And I just wanted you to briefly go over your reasoning in deciding to have a light touch and talk about the results you've had. Have you heard a lot of complaints relating to safety or livability the legalization of marijuana that would make you rethink the approach that you initially took?
So I heard some of what you said and others of it sort of got mushy, but I will try my best to answer that. Our council as a whole made a decision that they wanted to treat marijuana much like they would treat any business and within the regulatory process of the state. And so I would say that kind of the decision that they made, they wanted to just normalize. And I would say that we have had zero complaints come to council, zero complaints come to me as mayor. I think the only thing that we've had come is a concern from one of the marijuana providers here about whether we needed some regulations to about distances between businesses that sell marijuana. So, and that has not come to council yet. I checked with the chief of police this morning if we've been hearing any concerns. He says nothing out of the ordinary.
So, Mayor Piercy, how much difference have you seen in marijuana use since this went in effect? Is there a difference from before and after?
So you ask me if I'm seeing a difference in the usage?
Yes.
So my observation is that, of course, we are Eugene, and we had a pretty high usage of marijuana before. So, but I would say that there is a learning curve, that there were some people who really thought that when the law changed that you could smoke marijuana anywhere, anytime. And so we treated it as an education opportunity from our law enforcement officers to, our code people. We just started out with a light touch and say, here's the rules. And it's not changed in that regard, and so you just still have to obey the law, and there will still be repercussions if you don't. And I don't think they've had much pushback at all, and people are learning how to manage it appropriately.
That's very helpful. Other questions for Mayor?
Mayor, we've had some presentation about the impact on youth. And could you tell us a little bit about whether there's been a spike in public health concerns around youth and cannabis?
I can tell you that our health department down here has not brought that issue forward to us. They have deep concerns about smoking in general and public smoking in general, and certainly smoking marijuana would fit into that same concern about the health hazards of non-users being affected by it and the health hazard of users being affected by it. So I think those same kind of things prevail, and we still have too many youth who are using, who are smoking all kinds of things and vaping and so forth. But that's something that we are trying to address in a number of ways in our schools and in our community. We have no smoking in our park system now. We're trying to send a very strong message about what we think is healthy behavior.
So, Mayor, this is an issue that I want to raise that try to think how to say this. It's easier to come down from a high level of regulation than to scrabble back up having pegged it too low. And our experience with Lottery Row on Hayden Island, where we had a series of liquor licensees and lottery licensees all lined up together caused major livability issues there and been a pretty intractable problem. So it sounds like you've had a little bit of concern so far about the concentration question.
But it hasn't actually come from the public. It's more like come from the business itself.
Okay, worried about too much competition,
yes.
Too small an area.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Although I think we all have our eyes on that, and I would say to you that, you know, just from an observational point of view, I think, you know, we have, what, a sushi restaurant, a tattoo parlor, and a marijuana place about on every other corner, it seems like.
Okay. Great.
But we don't have any at this point. I get the impression that the public isn't seeing a big change.
Okay. Very helpful.
Thank you very much, Mayor Pacey.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Mayor Pacey.
You're very welcome.
Take care. Enjoy the sunshine. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, right. Well done on that. You made the point, and also the marijuana businesses here asked us to do the 1,000-foot buffer, and so that's one of the reasons that we had those long discussions last year was for that concern. So let's just turn to the under your binder, under the tab comparisons. Thank you very much. Sorry.
Thank you, ladies.
A lot going on. I really appreciate your time.
What tab?
Comparisons. So there's a big fold-out, marijuana co-comparison, city of first and state. Teresa and Victor are going to just walk us through the issues and their recommendations, and then we'll get to council discussion.
Thank you, Commissioner. So picking back up, there have been areas in which Portland city rules and state rules overlap or duplicate. One of those areas is the school buffers, where we do more to provide consistency than anything. We parrot that language in the city rules. The security plan, which is... So if we're going off of the fold-out comparison, I'm going to go fairly quickly through some of this, just in the interest of time. But the definitions of financial consideration, sales or sold, there is some overlap there, not in every situation. And part of that is also because of, on the second page, enforcement authority over unlicensed businesses. Neither the OLCC or OHA has enforcement authority over unlicensed businesses. That was one priority for our program in conjunction with our city partners to take that and to support the legitimate businesses by addressing the illegitimate businesses. In addition, the license location must be in a building or structure subject to building code. OLCC or OHA require that processors meet requirements for the Oregon Structural Code, not all license types. We do require that all license types be in a building subject to Oregon Structural Specialty Code. This does essentially restrict outdoor grows from occurring within the city of Portland, which at the time we thought was appropriate because of the close proximity. Where in other cases that close proximity, other jurisdictions, that close proximity doesn't exist. The residential zone restriction we went through require compliance with state and local regulations. We do uphold that a licensee must also meet the state licensing requirements in order to ultimately get a City of Portland marijuana regulatory license. The reason for that is we do not take into consideration financials, product safety, or the background of the applicant. We leave that to the state, and if they can meet the requirements at the state level, that's good enough for us. Screening requirements and or background checks for applicants. Whoops, just went through that. The security plans for businesses. For this in particular, we do have static requirements that are uniform for the City of Portland. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission and OHA have differing standards, A. B, the OLCC allows for waivers again, to try to take into consideration the variation across different types of jurisdictions. We tried to set it at a level that was reasonable for all licensees to meet, particularly the security plans. And Commissioner Novick, I wanted to get back to the question that you had asked earlier about what we were seeing or what we expected to see potentially from bad actors. And really, we expected a broad spectrum of behavior in truth, but either operating without any kind of authority from the state, and therefore potentially being an avenue for diversion to other states that have not legalized or to the illegal market. That was a major concern of ours. We were also concerned with mobile premises for good reason, because of Smoke Buddy in particular, but some other carts that were very similar to that. And when they encountered resistance in the community, they began to arm themselves in the neighborhood. So those kinds of experiences early on in legalization kind of provided us with some guidance as to what we wanted to say were appropriate regulations for security.
When you say armed, do you mean they started carrying guns?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
So we also require a city business license, proof of occupancy. There is a requirement for a city security alarm permit. There's a security alarm requirement at the state level for OHA. What we require is that that alarm be permitted appropriately so that it's on file with the Portland Police Bureau, which was a deficiency when OHA initially began the dispensary program with a lot of dispensaries, because they had a security alarm, but it wasn't appropriately permitted. So we make sure to draw that line for them and let them know that that's required.
So if you go to page 11 of the first pullout, we are proposing to bring an amendment to make sure that the city and the state security plans are aligned.
Correct.
Also, there is a big question at the state as well as locally about delivery services. So that's something that MPOS is continuing to discuss, and certainly would be open to bring new regulations for that at the city.
Yes, and actually, Commissioner, under regulations and procedures, after that initial document, if you want to flip to your tab, there is a breakdown provided by staff of the potential proposed amendments to code that have just begun to be vetted through the Marijuana Policy Oversight Team.
What tab is that under, please, Teresa?
It's under regulations and procedures, just after the language of 14B.130. Did everybody find it?
Since time is ticking, don't we just pause there and open it for council discussion? Thank you very much for your patience, everybody, while we whipped through all of this information.
Thank you.
I've got a couple. I'll be brief and let others do as they want. First, Commissioner Fritz, you and the staff of ONI have done an extraordinary amount of work in a short time here. There's been a lot of work done by multiple agencies in a short time, and I appreciate that, and also a lot of what I've heard from here today, a lot of collaboration with the industry, and that seems to me pretty impressive and healthy. So thank you all around for good work. Obviously, the collaboration does need to continue. There's some things I'm more concerned about and things I'm less concerned about than I was at the outset. I'm a little bit more concerned about getting our internal act together in terms of city bureaus working together. It's always a challenge. It's a big government. There are lots of bureaus. They report to different people. We have to keep working at that. So I've heard some things here that ought to be on our to-do list. I'm less worried about concentration and proliferation, because the system seems to be working. So that seems to be working pretty well. I'm sure there's still going to be a marketplace sorting out of how many dispensaries the community really needs to support people that want to purchase it. That the market will figure that out over time. Frankly, as the police commissioner, I'm less concerned than I thought I would be about people driving while impaired. that it's happening. It's serious, but we are having a lot of carnage on our streets from people consuming alcohol, and not much from people consuming marijuana, as far as I can tell. And we've had an uptick in traffic deaths in the city, and that's tragic and an outrage, and it's something that we all have to work on. But I don't see a connection yet between the legalization of marijuana and that mayhem that is our shared responsibility to reverse. The only other comment I would make is I'm always sensitive to the question of our role in the region and our role in the state, whether it's that we house homeless people and maybe not everybody else is thinking about that, you know, this issue. It appears that a great deal of the state of Oregon has opted out of the mandate from the voters of the state of Oregon. So that's an issue for the next legislature and for others to discuss. That is, if it is the law of the land in our state that marijuana is legal, then if a huge number of jurisdictions are saying, but not here, I'm concerned about that as an Oregonian. Again, I think we're making this work well in Portland from what I see so far, and thanks to your leadership and what the Bureau and others are doing in cooperation. But if we have, you know, you look at this chart and you just see massive areas of the state where this is not legal, I'm concerned about that. So those are my reactions.
So I actually, a couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion, a hearing on my proposal to have a higher tax rate on companies that pay their CEOs more than 100 times what they pay their average worker. And Commissioner Fritz commented at the time that she expected to see a pitched battle between hordes of workers and hordes of business folks, and seemed slightly disappointed we didn't get that. I actually had a similar reaction here because I was kind of thinking that we would have folks in the industry saying, well, here's the top five ridiculous regulations we have, and here are the staff defending them. I didn't really hear that. I actually was really pleased, as all of us were, by the praise that folks in the industry lavished on the folks doing the regulatory work and how much progress is made in such a short time. I do still think, though, I mean, after hearing from Mayor Piercy that they have had a much lighter touch, and she said that they've heard no complaints from the citizenry about a system with a much lighter touch, I would like to see specifically from the industry, if they do exist, like, here are the changes that we would make, and here's why. And then I'd like to follow up personally with the regulatory staff and sort of ask for each of them the question of, what problems were these regulations intended to avoid, and here's why the changes should not be made, or in certain cases, it sounds like maybe the staff will agree the changes should be made. So this has been really helpful in terms of providing overall background, but I still look forward to sort of a point-by-point discussion of specific regulations and reasons therefore.
Yeah, I want to add to the chorus of thank yous to Commissioner Fritz for the way this has been structured, and to staff for really putting together a fantastic work session. We have a difference of opinion in this building about the value of work sessions. Apparently, Mayor Vera Katz had a very strong view to the negative about work sessions. I find work sessions essential. And on these complex issues, to have the luxury of having the kind of high-level presentation from staff and then stakeholders coming in, it's unique in our work. And while I haven't had a chance to review all the materials you gave us, we're going to spend the next week going through it in detail. We appreciate all your hard work. So I want to start at the 30,000-foot level and then come down to the question at hand. Measure 91. 71% of Portland said yes to cannabis. That's a compelling statistic. In the report, I have a concern about 506 applications and 94 approved. So there's something to be learned from that, and there may be some streamlining and some other things we can do in the short term as we look at the bigger policy question. And the other data point that stuck out for me was 5 violations. Frankly, in my office, we get lots of calls from people complaining about Uber drivers. And they're usually people who drive taxis who continue to feel that have strong feelings about Uber and Lyft. We get complaints from people about restaurants that do a big business on Sunday brunch, because that has a huge neighborhood impact. We get 0 calls from people about cannabis. And while I have some friends who don't like it and grumble about small businesses in their neighborhood, it's frankly, it's like lots of things that people don't like in their neighborhood. I mean, there you can fill in the blank about something. There's too many of something. We get a lot of complaints from the Pearl District that there are a lot of restaurants and bars. And we are, sometimes the mayor reminds people that actually they were there before you moved there.
And they're full.
And they're full. And they're, so